Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. I'm your host, Javed Khan Jadoon, and this is Radio Pakistan's News and Current Affairs channel. Listeners, today, the entire world is observing the Universal Children's Day like Pakistan. And this year's theme is For Every Child, A Fair Chance. We know that countries like Pakistan, which is a developing country and making strides in many fields, there have been a lot of improvements in the healthcare, in the education sector, and other social delivery systems. With child mortality reducing in Pakistan, the pressures are increasing on the government to promote facilities like education and healthcare, which are primary factors for the growth of any society and socio-economic development of any country. We have with us in our studio some very distinguished guests today. We have with us the UNICEF country representative in Pakistan, Angela Kearney. Welcome to our studio.
Thank you very much, sir.
And we also have with us Minister of State, Mohammed Baligho Rehman, Minister of State for Education and Professional Training, Interior and Narcotics Control. Welcome to our studio, Minister.
Thank you very much.
To start our conversation, Angela, would you like to tell our listeners about the significance of the day, the Universal Children's Day, and how it can translate into reality the efforts of several governments, many governments across the globe, to make progress towards rights of the children and the basic facilities for them?
Thanks very much, Radio Pakistan, and good afternoon, listeners. It's really important that we celebrate success for children, and I think that we know that many things are improving in the world and in Pakistan. We need to also remember that the world is a very unfair place for the poorest and most disadvantaged children since we adopted the Convention on the Rights of the Child in 1990. And so we are celebrating that Convention on the Rights of the Child, which is what also Pakistan signed and ratified really early on and is also being held accountable. So the government of Pakistan is accountable to the people to make sure every child has a right. We have lots of things that have happened globally in the world. We've reduced the number of women who are dying in pregnancy. We've put the number of children into school as millions and millions more since we began the Convention on the Rights of the Child. But we now have much better data available to us and analysis to show us that rural children and most especially uneducated children, but marginalised children, children of different ethnic groups, children of different religious groups, are more disadvantaged often in countries than the general population. So I think that what we want to look at for Universal Children's Day is we want to make sure that every child in Pakistan has access to their basic rights that the government has signed on to.
Angela, when we talk about every child a fair chance in education, in healthcare, in social services delivery, what exactly do we mean by fair chance for every child?
Yeah, I think it begins in pregnancy for a mother. So we want a healthy mother who has had access to antenatal care. So she's been received by a qualified midwife or doctor through her pregnancy. That if she can, she delivers in a health facility. If she can't, she delivers with a skilled birth attendant. And then that mother has the access to be able to exclusively breastfeed her baby for the first 6 months. That baby has access to the immunizations that it should have.
Mm-hmm. That's the first stage.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But then it goes on, and that first thing after that would be that the child has access to birth registration. We believe that registering a child is a passport to protection, because later on, that birth registration is so important. It's important for school, but it's important. We don't want children in conflict with the law, not being dealt with by the right people. Mm-hmm. And if they have a birth registration and they have this passport to protection, mm-hmm. we believe that supports those child's rights.
Minister Baligho Rehman, when we talk about for every child a fair chance, in Pakistani context, how would you like to translate these opportunities for our children? We know that the child mortality and things like that have certainly declined. And Pakistan is on the road towards achieving the MDGs in particular context to child facilities in Pakistan. doesn't it put more pressure on the government to increase and enhance not only healthcare facilities, but educational as well?
Well, thank you, Mr. Jadoon. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and thank you, Radio Pakistan, for giving this opportunity to express our views. Well, it is indeed a very important topic, and because a child is the most valuable asset any country has, and any nation has, I must say. And this is our future. And we must, all of us must concentrate and focus on the development and right development of our future. And as Ms. Kearney has rightly pointed out, the focus starts from the womb. It starts from the prenatal
care. Right, from the pregnancy, yes.
Prenatal care and postnatal care and all the developmental stages are of extreme importance. And studies show us that unless the child is given proper nutrition, the brain doesn't develop properly in the first 3 years. So all of it is very important. And when we're talking about a fair chance for every child as the theme of this World Universal Children's Day, fair chance means that the child, no matter what kind of background he or she comes from, whether...
No matter what economic strata he comes from.
Yes, whether how much poverty he or she is faced to, but it is a right of the child that he or she be given equal opportunities to grow up. And that's not possible if we do not take good care of the child in terms of education and in terms of nutrition, in terms of health, and equitable opportunities. Until that child becomes mature, and so all kind of facilities should be provided to the child. You rightly said, alhamdulillah, in last, especially over the period of years, Pakistan has been improving, and the last 2 years has seen extraordinarily focus from the provincial governments and the federal government on education and health especially. All the indicators are improving. In education, we see that right after the first year of the new government, we see that number of out-of-school children dropped by 10%. Similarly, our literacy rate has gone up. Similarly, our net enrollment ratio has gone up for primary students as well. And child mortality is coming down. But still, we're not there yet. So we have to continue this struggle. We have a long way to go, and we need to improve our all the statistics and equal opportunities for all the children, which I again repeat, are the most valuable asset we have.
Angela, as a UNICEF representative, how do you see the situation in Pakistan? As Minister pointed out, that we have made strides in many fields. We have made strides in healthcare, though we know that healthcare is a provincial subject. But along with the guidance from the federal government, the provinces have literally made very significant strides in these particular fields. But what is your take as far as Pakistani situation is concerned?
I think it's a very mixed story, and I think that absolutely there's a commitment from this democratic government, and they want to be held accountable, and they know that they are held accountable. So you have your democracy with your parliamentarians, but you have a very vibrant civil society holding the minister. For example, they come with the data, they come with the evidence, and they also sometimes come with individual stories. One of the things is that we would really encourage is that ending child marriage. You know, a girl and a boy should be able to marry after they're 18 when they make their choice themselves. Recently, the government of Sindh has introduced a law where girls can only marry post 18. That's a very positive step, and we would hope that that's in line with the Convention on the Rights of the Child. I come back to, as the minister said, there's been massive improvements in education and numbers, and we're very happy about that, where the number of children out of school and primary school has gone down to, I think it's 6.1 million, if
yes,
not
that's right.
Now, a massive change. But at the same time, and I know I work closely with this minister, it's about quality as well. It's not just about numbers of children who turn up for school every day. It's about, are the teachers there? Is the quality there? And is it safe for teenage girls to go to that school? Is there water and sanitation so when those girls begin their first period that they are safe to keep on going to school? So it's a package that we must provide through the federal ministry, through the province, through the districts, and actually through the communities as well. And so I think there's some good stories. Just coming back to health, child mortality has been reducing, but what hasn't changed since 1990 in Pakistan is the child deaths in the first month of life. And we know that almost all the deaths in the first month of life are caused by pneumonia and diarrhea, both totally preventable diseases. So working with the Federal Minister of Health, but working with the provinces. But you've also got to work with the universities who are training the doctors, who are training the midwives. But also, we've got to work with mothers and use the media, like Radio Pakistan, to tell the mothers, you've got to keep your baby warm. You've got to go and get the immunizations for the baby, the vaccination. So a lot of it is to use the communication channels. Not all Pakistani mothers are literate yet. Not all Pakistani mothers know that you should treat the cord with chlorhexidine and not with ashes like the mother-in-law or the grandmother said. It's things like that. We can't expect miracles, but I think we want to use the communications available to us.
Minister Baligh Rahman, as Angela pointed out, that it's not really the number, it's the quality of education which will ultimately matter. Since we know that education is also a provincial subject, but since the federal government plays a role, definitely a very key role in this regard, how satisfied you are that we are making strides in this direction as well to improve the quality of education, especially at the primary level?
As I told you earlier, that we are making improvements, but we are not there yet. And as I told you earlier, that we have improved and a number of out-of-school children has come down, but still we have millions of children who are out of school. Mm-hmm. So that is really a matter of great concern for us, and we are working hard. All the provincial governments are working hard towards that as well. Similarly, it's very rightly pointed out that quality matters. And we all understand that. Right after we assumed the responsibility in 2013, Education Ministry was the first ministry which rolled out a futuristic plan for accelerating our progress towards MDGs. And that extensively talked about the quality of education. And the good thing is that provincial governments who are mainly responsible for working in education and health sectors, and also the federal government is focusing on quality as well. They're improving their teacher training modules, and quality is also linked with missing facilities, because you can't have quality education if you don't have even basic facilities in the school. So that phenomenal stride has been seen in providing missing facilities by all the provinces, and it has been phenomenal in terms of number of toilets, in terms of boundary walls, in terms of and the classroom furniture being provided, and even the classrooms given. But still, there are many schools which are which do not have all these facilities. But it is satisfactory to see that in these 2 years, the number of in the manner in which these missing facilities were provided was remarkable. But we need to further improve on that.
But some critics say that as far as financial allocations are concerned, for education, for healthcare, they are not sufficient, and probably we need to do more. I understand 2.5 years for any government is too little a time to sort of change the entire direction. But what is the focus of the present government? Do we have enough allocations for these very crucial sectors like healthcare and education?
Look, this is a very important question. And a lot of confusion prevails in the mind of the people, and it's basically further clarity is needed, and allow me some time to deliberate on that. And the thing is that Pakistan, to start with, has a much smaller per capita GDP. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, our budget size, total budget, in terms of GDP is much less as well. Even though our government has improved and the results have they've tried to improve the economy, and the results are pouring in as well. Our tax to GDP ratio has been improved in the last 2 years, despite war on terror, despite all the law and order situation, and despite energy crisis. We were able to take up our tax to GDP ratio from 8.5% to 9%, 9.4% actually. And that is remarkable looking at all the situation. We need to further take it up. But when you have total revenues, which is such little as compared to your entire GDP, and how can you expect that 4% of GDP, which would be almost 50% of your entire budget, could be spent on education, which is needed? So the answer to your question is that, yes, we need to spend more to meet all and to cope up with all the needs we have. But secondly, are we spending enough? I mean, whatever resources we have available with us, I think we are spending a phenomenal amount towards education. All our provinces are spending around 25% of their entire budgets towards education. This is a rare phenomenon. I mean, if you look around the globe, you will hardly find any country which has budget spending quarter of their entire budgets going towards education. So that is good. And in the federal government, which is mainly responsible for tertiary education, in budget 2012-13, if you see Higher Education Commission's budget, it was under 40 billion rupees were released to Higher Education Commission. And in the current year, 2015-16, more than 80 billion rupees will be released to Higher Education Commission.
By the federal government.
By the federal government. So we're not talking about a 5%, 10% or 20% increase.
Double.
It's more than doubling the amount for... So that speaks volumes about the seriousness of the government. So governments are serious. They want to spend more and more. But we have certain financial constraints and limitations as well. So this small fiscal space is not allowing us to cope with all the requirements. But the good news is economy is going becoming better. Our tax to GDP ratio is going up day by day. And hopefully, we'll be having enough fiscal space to cope in years to come. But it's a slow, gradual process, and we are on it.
Angela, despite war on terror, despite the losses which Pakistan has suffered to the tune of billions of dollars, some rough estimates say over $100 billion losses Pakistan suffered in the last 10 years. And the figures which minister gave, 25% of their total budget, the provinces are spending on education. The budget for the higher education almost doubled. How would you respond?
Yeah, I think it's balancing the books that obviously is Parliament with democracy. What we would like to see is we need the analysis available that we all, many of us here, whether it's the United Nations or it's think tanks or it's civil society, have some good data available. We know that in the rural areas, they are more likely to not go to school than in the urban areas. And we know that the poorer children are more likely to die before their fifth birthday than the kids from the richer quintile. So we have the analysis. We need to make sure that the budgets that are available are looking to the most marginalised, looking to the most disadvantaged. And so as I go back to in my very early remarks today, in birth registration, you know, the government is doing amazing stuff with the private sector. So in Sindh, in some areas, Telenor is helping mobile birth registration. So it's private sector giving their facilities available so that children can be registered with births. This is out in Tata. So it's not in I'm not talking about Karachi or the cities. And with this, if we can use technology, there's so many things that are available to us now that we didn't have before. So it's never going to be enough, but I think that we need to look at the money that's available. We need to make sure it goes to the poorest and the most disadvantaged.
A greater equity to break the cycle of poverty. How we translate it into reality? I mean, saying is easier.
It is, absolutely. You know, and I think
doing,
we know that.
Like Minister pointed out, spending more than 4% of the GDP is not an easy thing to do. A country like Pakistan, resource constraint. when UNICEF or any international organization talks about education facilities in Pakistan, they must keep into considerations the challenges which the government, any government in Pakistan faces. Last 10 years, already pointed out, the ongoing fight against terror. But despite these challenges, are you satisfied that the poverty of cycle is breaking in Pakistan?
I think that there's some innovations that are really happening. So the accelerated learning program in some areas, I was recently in Balochistan, and where children go to madrasas in the morning to learn the Quran and do all the madrasa work. And in the afternoon, those children come back for accelerated learning with the support of a curriculum that's been done by federal ministry, province and district, where children can do 6 years schooling in 3 years. So there's a program that helps those kids. Let's be practical. There'll always be working children in the next 10 years in some poor families in Pakistan. Those children need to work. We don't believe in child labour. We don't want it, but we need to be pragmatic. So let's make sure that if they work, that they're not in hazardous work, that they're not under any violence in their work. And then in the afternoon or at night, they can go to school and learn the skills that they want. So they're given a chance. I want to say the glass is half full and we're getting there, but it means that we still have to keep the government accountable. We need to keep our leaders accountable for what they have promised under the CRC. So it's not all doom and gloom, but I think we do know that there's real disadvantaged groups in Pakistan that we have to be giving special consideration for, and making sure that they also have a voice in their rights.
Minister Baligur Rahman, we know that education forms the bedrock of any country's socio-economic uplift. She has already, Angela, raised the issue of madrasa education. They say that madrasas are probably one of the biggest NGOs in Pakistan, who are providing education, shelter, food to the orphans, and to the poor, and to the have-nots and marginalized section of the society. But the challenge comes when people start talking about madrasas as nurseries of terrorism. You multiply the challenges for Pakistan. There is no differentiation between the certain marginalized section of the society and the haves and the have-nots. In that particular context, I'm talking about how we deal with this situation. We promote madrasas, and then we get to listen to certain criticism that these are providing as nurseries for prospective terrorists and so on and so forth.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because there's a lot of misconceptions about madrasa education, and it shouldn't be referred to as what you just said. But unfortunately, that is kind of perception which went on in some other countries as well. I think the issue relating to madrasa was avoided by previous governments, and it was not dealt with the focus and with the energy which it required.
Even maybe the necessary reforms as well.
Yes, and there was a lot of talk in some of the previous governments about reforms, but it never took place. It never took off, actually. I'm pleased to inform you that currently we are engaged totally with all the madrasa boards and wafaq, as they call it, because in five different sects in Pakistan.
Wafaq al-Mudaris.
Yes, five different sects of Pakistan. They're called five wafaqs, and they have different wafaq of their own. And then there's an organization which is a combined organization of all these wafaqs and some other clerics as well. And that is called ITMA, Ittihad Tanzimat al-Madaris Pakistan. So this ITMP is totally in talks with the Interior Ministry and Education Ministry as well, with the Prime Minister as well, and we have decided a roadmap. As you're very well aware, that Pakistan, under the dynamic leadership of Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, embarked upon this journey, which is under National Plan of Action, as we call it. And this National Plan of Action talks about a multifaceted approach towards the issues which we deal with, and ending the extremism in the country, and also so many other areas in which all the political parties have come together, and all the stakeholders have come together to decide upon this journey. And we also introduce zero tolerance towards hate speeches.
Mm-hmm.
We introduce zero tolerance towards teaching any kind of extremism in any seminary, whether it be madrasa or something else.
Mm-hmm.
And the results are pouring in. We have established this helpline called 1717. People do call whenever they hear any kind of hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are taken to task, whoever is responsible for that. There's so many cases which have been registered in the provinces, and then those certain religious leaders were arrested as well, or whether the imam or khatib, if they were not cognizant of the fact that their speech could ignite some kind of hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And so when zero tolerance was shown, now things are getting much better on that prospect. And I must, you know, recognize and appreciate the role of ITMP
mm-hmm.
and Five Wafaqs, because they have been fully cooperating with the government in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
And they say they acknowledge and they agree to the fact that the will of the people of Pakistan, which has come out, transpired out of the parliament and out of the all the national action plan,
mm-hmm.
they're not only fully following that, but also fully supportive of that. And even in certain provinces have gone into screening of whatever material and the way it's being taught in any religious seminary, madrasa. And if anything objectionable is found,
mm-hmm.
These ITMP and Wafaqs are helping government to take that material out of the course and making it more, because previously not enough deliberation was done.
Mm-hmm.
So inadvertently or knowingly, if something was added, now it's being taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, we see that biggest problem comes when all these, because millions of students go to madrasas, and when these students, after graduating from madrasas, when they come, when they graduate from there, they do not relate themselves with the environment
with the
around
mainstream,
them. With the mainstream.
Yes, yes.
And at times, the only destination they can go is another mosque where they can be imam.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually they're at loss in finding jobs which are commonly available to all the other people.
Mm-hmm.
So now it has been decided between all the madrasas and the government that formal education will be introduced in these madrasas as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they'll be following the curriculum, which is government of Pakistan's curriculum,
in conformity with the rest of the curriculum.
Yes, in conformity with the rest of the curriculum, and so that they all these students were responsibility of the state
mm-hmm.
to take good care of, and so that they are mainstreamed, so that they are enabled and educated in a way so that they can be part of a normal society.
Angela, Minister very very elaborately sort of gave the details of the initiatives of the government in this regard to streamline madrasas in Pakistan and bring them in conformity with the modern education system in the country. I would move on to the other aspect, which is very heartening in Pakistan, and that is girls' education. If you go to rural areas, you see that girls are coming out and they have been registered in schools on a massive scale. We all agree and know that the girls' education is extremely important, not only in reducing the child mortality, but even sort of enhancing this living standard, living conditions as well. How do you see Pakistani scene as far as girls' education is concerned?
I think that it's fabulously important that there's now a recognition that girls need a special place within the education discussions and the framework. So I think that the acknowledgement that the number of out-of-school girls is a real worry to us. But there's some very positive, and the Minister just talked about the National Plan of Action, and I think within that there's been allowances to female teachers, stipend for girl students for the poorest family. So there's an acknowledgement, but there's also a practical way forward with those things. We also know that the recently enacted legislative framework of Article 25A, providing an inclusive model for out-of-school children, especially in girls, exists, but it's on paper. We now want to take this forward and make it work, and it's behoved to all of us
mm-hmm.
to support that. So there's going to be a need to allocate the significant resources that are available to make sure that we have credible data to expedite the enforcement and implementation and fulfill the constitutional commitment. So it's there in writing. That's a huge step which we didn't have before. Now let's make it happen. And I think the we need to help the Minister of Education provide the data to the Minister of Finance, and we need to show that Minister of Finance and obviously the politicians and the parliamentarians, educating girls is educating a nation. Just one statistic, a young woman who's had 4 years of primary school is 50% less chance of having a stillbirth. Mm-hmm. So it comes into child mortality, child morbidity. An educated girl is much more likely to delay her first getting married and having her first pregnancy. An educated girl is much less likely to have a preterm baby. All of those things. So I think I'm here with the Minister of Education to show this commitment. Lots of it's on paper, but lots of it's actually in the hearts of the politicians now, and we've got to hold them accountable to what they've agreed to. Minister?
Yes, definitely. And it's not just on the paper. I would like to take on from here that it's not only been planned and talked about, but also some programs are being executed, mm-hmm. and we can see it in action. For instance, Pakistan created this fund for girls' education. Yes. A part of that for Pakistan, and part of that for the world as well. Mm-hmm. And Pakistan contributed $10 million in that fund, and this has been done with UNESCO. Yes. And I'm pleased to inform you that some other countries have also contributed in that fund now. And this program has recently been started. Mm-hmm. 12 pilot districts have been selected in Pakistan, in all the provinces. And in these districts, starting from advocacy for girls' education and going into missing facilities and providing schools for girls' education, there is an approach which has different aspects to it, and it's being worked. And we are confident and that UNESCO is carrying out this initial pilot project along with the Federal Ministry of Education. And we are hopeful that this will be a success model, and we'll be able to scale this program up in the years to come. And good thing is that even though we are facing with gender disparity in schools education, and around 9%, there's a difference of around 9%, but the good thing is that gender disparity is reducing, and we are improving on that front as well. Taking on from here, I would also like to mention that now the whole world is talking about and embarking upon a new ambitious journey, which is called Sustainable Development Goals. Mm-hmm. And United Nations has pioneered this project, and almost all the countries on the globe have signed this, and Honorable Prime Minister was in New York in September to join this Committee of Nations. And Sustainable Development Goals talk of remarkable goals and targets. They talk of ending poverty and ending hunger. We're not talking about reducing poverty or reducing hunger. It's doing away with hunger and poverty. Mm. And in Pakistan, we are very keen, and we're very focused, and we're very determined. We have a resolve and commitment to take this on. Head on and take these challenges. Unfortunately, when many years ago Millennium Development Goals were introduced, the first committee to achieve those goals was formed in Pakistan after adoption of those goals, after 2 years of adoption of those goals.
Before the deadline of 2015.
No, I'm saying that initially when they were adopted.
Okay. That's slow.
So it took us 2 years in Pakistan to form a committee which would be. Okay. Planning a way forward for that. And unfortunately, due to change of governments every now and then in between, due to non-continuation of democracy, I must say, which results in changing the policies. And unless you have continued policies, you can't really deliver. But now, good thing is, mm-hmm. even before adoption of SDGs in September 2015, even before that, Ministry of Federal Education was the first ministry mm-hmm. in which we formed cell for that, and the committee was formed. We were talking about it, how we will be achieving it. And then now we have in our Federal Ministry of Planning, we have a cell. In Ministry of Health, there is a cell which is talking about, and we are already discussing and trying to align ourselves towards achieving those goals. So this is the kind of seriousness we are showing, and we are hopeful that this time we'll be achieving these goals.
Minister Baligh Rahman, as we all know that women play a role of a catalyst of change, in agent of change in any society, and especially in a country like Pakistan. We have heard Angela saying something about the facts and the fiction. You already pointed out the issue of perceptions or misperceptions. My problem is it once again the issue of underestimating ourselves or underreporting ourselves while on the ground, when you travel to the rural society, the rural areas? As already pointed out at the outset, you see a massive number of girls coming out and being registered in schools and being educated. And in many cases, I would like to say, despite resource constraints, the quality education is being imparted to them. Is there any problem of not being projecting ourselves in a proper way?
Yes, I think there is. I mean, if we have to be realistic, and we have to be, now we have, I believe, the data which we have, which gives us a clear picture that what kind of deficiencies we have. Mm-hmm. So reality is there. We have deficiencies, and it is. We need to have a pragmatic approach.
But the right projection seems to be not there.
But at the same time, while we are looking at the deficiency, we also need to take in account of the improvements which are taking place. Mm-hmm. We need to take in account of the developments which are there, so that we don't take away hope, so that we give optimism, mm-hmm. so that we give confidence to all the teams which are working towards that goal. All the governments, as a part of federal government, it is my duty, and I always try to do that, to create healthy competition between all the provinces. Mm-hmm. And while appreciating their good work, mm-hmm. we also show them, we get them together on one table and show them that how one province is leading and other is lagging behind.
Exactly.
But at the same time, whichever province is lagging behind has shown some improvement.
And some resilience
that,
as well.
Yeah, yes. That needs to be appreciated as well. Similarly, the role of civil society, the role of NGOs, the role of
the
UN agencies is there. So that needs to be recognized as well. But unfortunately, in our society, we often see that pessimism is often, propagated. And people, some of the people who start believing that, no good is coming along and nothing good is being done, that needs to be rectified as well. Unless we do that, we can't move forward.
Angela, only pessimism is being projected, not only by certain sections of the media, but maybe some members of the civil society as well. While on the contrary, as Minister pointed out, there are enormous achievements, on the ground in many sectors. Would you agree that maybe it's not the proper projection of the achievements of the government, and it's only the criticism which is not based on facts and figures?
Yeah, and I think it's both ways. I think, as I said, I'd like to see the glass half full. I think we need to have a healthy civil society that is safe to be able to criticise, but at the same time, we need, and certainly the government needs to respond. I just have some data in my head. Recently, I was in Sindh for the launching of the report on the Multiple Indicator Cluster Survey, which is a survey UNICEF uses in the world to look at children. And, in Sindh province now, 85% of families now have a cell phone. That is a whole new way. If you have a cell phone and there's someone sick who's having a antenatal hemorrhage or having a severe pneumonia, you can ring for a car, or you can ring for an ambulance, or you can call for a doctor. All of this thing has opened up.
Maybe you can call for help from your neighbours as well.
Absolutely. Yes. 40% of households in Sindh now have a motorbike available to them. So even if you're in a rural area, most villages have something. It's just sort of as development goes on that we need to tell this story. So that's why I'm talking about this this partnership with Telenor on birth registration. I think another thing that's really been a very negative image from Pakistan has been polio, and we know that polio is only left in Afghanistan and Pakistan. But this year, we've reduced our caseload
but
by
Angela,
85%
Angela,
compared to last
year. Let me, for this interruption. When you talk about polio,
yes,
we know that the polio has been imported from Afghanistan. Every case which was determined later on, either an Afghan family traveled from Afghanistan to Pakistan, or they were living in Pakistan, they went back to Afghanistan, they came back with polio virus. Would you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. We've actually exported it to Afghanistan as well from Pakistan. But I think that's not the discussion. The discussion is now having access to every child and the whole thing. We have got the virus cornered because we
Angela, my question is basically once again relating to the perception issue.
Sure.
When something comes from Afghanistan into Pakistan, we always label it Pakistani. When somebody goes outside the country with a Pakistani passport while being an Afghan national, even people know over there, they label them Pakistanis. So once again, I think there's little problem of perception as well, or rather misperception.
All I want to do is UNICEF within the partnership with the government of Pakistan, and Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is leading this polio eradication. It's a real blot on your public
yes.
image internationally. He has Senator Aisha Farooq, who's absolutely the Prime Minister's focal point. And then we have a National Emergency Operations Centre here, and we have it in all of the provinces. And what we've changed the strategy the government has of, we've got to meet the consistently, continuously missed children, the children who never got the drops. How are we doing that in KP? The numbers are coming down because who's giving the drops? Are women from the community. Those women have access to the house, they know all of the community. In the old days, before we used a man to knock on the door, the man of the house said, there's no children inside there, and he didn't have access. Now who knocks on the door is a woman from the community. She knows that there's children inside. She can go in and she can give the drops to the children. So I think that we need to make sure that 2015, this is our low transmission season in the winter, that we are doing these immunisation days through the whole country. And every single child must get the vaccine. I think I also talk about perceptions. We used to think that many people refused on religious grounds. The number of refusals now is absolutely tiny, and we know every child in Pakistan now whose parents have refused, and there's ways we can talk to the imams, because the religious leaders of Pakistan have said very clearly polio vaccination is a right of a child, and there's nothing in the Quran to say no polio. So we have such positive leadership on this, and that's why I'm saying
absolutely I agree with you.
Let me add on to it that there's we must appreciate that the environment has become very conducive and very
yes,
favorable recently, because Prime Minister is leading from the front. Mm-hmm. Federal Minister for Health, Madam Sairavza Tar, is also part of the team who's leading from the front. And at the same time, the Senator Aisha is there as a chairperson. Mm-hmm. And along with, and we also have to see that with the success of National Action Plan, in which
yes.
Operation Zarbe Azab is clearing up all the area which was mm-hmm. inaccessible before.
Mm-hmm.
And this wonderful new approach employing local women or doing and administering the jobs has made it easier as well. So it's a win-win situation, and things are improving again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's because of the success of Operation Zarbe Azab, as Minister pointed out, that we have more access to some of the areas where there was no access at all earlier.
Yeah.
But I think we will be treading into very strange territory when we talk about how polio campaign got affected in Pakistan,
sure.
because that would be a different topic. We know that we do have the background as well.
Well, we better stay out of that.
Stay out of that. So I think it would be simplistic to say that maybe it's because of the religious factor that our polio campaign got affected. I think, well, on the contrary, there are many other factors, because Pakistan was polio-free. We know that the parents everywhere, not only in the cities, in the villages as well, they always welcome the polio teams. Last question, as Minister is getting late. There are, according to your report, 2.5 million children under the age of 15 years, along with 3.9 million young people between 15 to 24 are HIV positive. This is also one of the most important factors which is affecting our healthcare system, not only in Pakistan, but globally. To start with, Minister, are we sensitive towards this particular issue?
Well, there are certain diseases which are really worrisome, including HIV, and certainly hepatitis B and C are part of that, which has huge presence. But I'm not so sure, because I do not have on hand the data of HIV, but certainly hepatitis B and C are big alarms. Mm-hmm. But all these diseases are fatal, and government is definitely trying to improve upon the healthcare system.
We do have some strategy in place.
Yes, we do. And at the same time, we also have the strategy starts from the main idea that prevention is better than cure. So we have this. Recently, Ms. Kearney was talking about the sanitation at schools. So we have recently together designed a program. It's called WASH, which would be looking after sanitation and hygiene conditions in school, and going for awareness, and especially for the girls who come of age as well. But going beyond that, as for the cure is concerned, we have embarked upon this new program, which Prime Minister will be announcing soon. That is about health insurance scheme for every Pakistani citizen, and that we think will be a game changer for Pakistan. And when these stakeholders, the insurance companies, will be involved, they will be joining hands with the government for creating awareness against these diseases as well.
Angela, last word on Universal Children's Day.
I think we need to celebrate success and strive for ongoing improvement. So we need to look at the equity stuff, that we need to look at the most disadvantaged children, the most hard to reach children, and the most vulnerable children. But we must celebrate success.
Thank you very much, Angela Kearney, Country Representative UNICEF, and Minister of State Mohammed Baligh Rahman, Minister of State for Federal Education and Professional Training, Interior and Narcotics Control. Thank you so much for joining us in our studio and talking about this very, very extremely important issue of children and the future of Pakistan. Thank you so much, Minister.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Angela, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.